Welcome to the Sharp 600, brought to you by Covers.com. I'm Rob Cressy, and I'm super excited to be jamming with you. And joining me today to jam about horse racing is analyst at Twin Spires in Bet America, Scott Shapiro. You can follow him on Twitter at ScottShap34. Scott, great to have you back on the show.
Yeah, Rob, good to see you. Interesting times in our lives. I think we've talked mostly NFL football. We got a little bit of new college hoops towards the end of the year there with a to be continued that never quite happened. But looking forward to chatting horse racing, as you know, a big part of my life.
So let's start with this. Why are we doing this show? Because there's not a lot of variety in betting options right now. But at the same time, we want to give you something that is evergreen. You can listen today and it'll be just as valuable today as it will be a year from right now. So this is something that will come in handy for a large majority of you. I know that not everybody is a horse racing diehard bettor, but at the same time, many of us have gone to the Derby or the Belmont or gone to Keeneland or gone to a local racetrack with friends to throw a few back and have some fun. So nonetheless, no matter where you fall in the spectrum, we're bringing Scott on to help you be a more informed bettor, to help you be smarter. That way, whether you're doing it once or you're doing it 100 times, we're going to put you in the best position to succeed when you go to the track or you're doing online horse racing betting. So Scott, quickly, let's look about your background in terms of horse racing, in terms of why we should listen to you about this.
Yeah, I remember my dad taking me to the racetrack a number of times as I was before my teen years. Got into it probably about 10 or 11, was always very intrigued. It's a very, if you like analytical puzzles, horse racing's a great game. Very difficult. It's not one of those games where you can expect to win more times than when you lose. But when you do win and hit a big one, it's very much a sizable hit, kind of like hitting a 16 parlay kind of situation. So that always intrigued me, getting a lot of bang for your buck. And got really more into horse racing as I was in high school, went to Garden State Park, which is no longer exists, but in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. And then really got into things as I got out of college and had a couple really big hits over the years. And the biggest one came in February of 2013 when I was in the music industry. And it's actually what got me into the career of sports betting and horse racing was the big horse racing hit. And I got hired by a number of places to write. And then I've been a part of the Churchill Downs family for about 5 years now. And you can find me on air some of the days at Churchill Downs Racetrack, including during the Kentucky Derby. And also I'm right for Twin Spires and Bet America all the time. So really love horse racing. I think it's a game that highly recommend you at least giving it a shot.
So as for my horse racing credentials, I have enjoyed going to the Derby and I've enjoyed going to Keeneland with friends. I lived in Cincinnati for 6 years and those were just a quick party bus away of an hour and change. So I'm coming at things certainly from the mindset of the fan, but guess what? Everybody loves to get winners, right? So for me, I'm going to help lead us to the water by asking you a bunch of questions. And let's start right now with how to bet online. So with not a lot of sports betting options, horse racing is one of them. So how does horse racing online betting work?
Well, there's ADWs, Advanced Deposit Wagering Companies, that function as the for lack of a better term, the bookmaker. Now, the difference in horse race wagering compared to betting with a book is it's a parimutuel wager. So all the books have the same price, and the price is based on how the public bets. So basically, when you win or lose, you get a slice of how many people had that bet. So the track, the business, the industry takes a percentage of it. And you can bet on a number of different sites. There's plenty of those. TwinSpires.com and BetAmerica.com are some of those places. But it's key to know you're betting against the public in horse racing, not against the book.
Which is an extremely important thing because I think back to when you and I were jamming about the NFL and we had the 80-20 rule. When 80% of the action from the public's on one side, we wanted to be on another. And for something like this, if a large majority of the action is on one side, that actually may hurt you. of course, we do want to get winners, but the value is stripped out of it because everyone's like, we like that, and the numbers change accordingly. And I think one thing that's really important for people who are new to this to understand is that when you place the bet on the horse, it's not necessarily, oh, I got the Packers at -3. I'm locked in at the good number. You're waiting until it closes and all of a sudden it's going to tell you what that odd is.
Yes, that's absolutely imperative to understand the price that you like. So if you make a bet at a sports book, you know your odds. In this case, the longer you wait, the better chance you have of understanding the exact price. But a lot of money comes in late on these things. So it can work in your benefit. It can work against you. Still good to be contrarian, though, Rob. We always talk about being contrarian when you and I speak. Being contrarian can definitely help. Riding the being on the same thing as the public long term probably isn't going to work.
So I will share my one nugget of horse racing information that I can add value to. So knowing this, I'm a contrarian. Whenever I would go to the track, I'm actually looking for the least sexy name. So for me, I've got my race booklet and everything. So I'm doing the best that I can, but there's a good element of trying being informed, shooting in the dark, seeing what the analysts are saying and going from there. Let's say I just have no idea whatsoever. You're going to see a horse race like Magnum or Bullet or Blazing Glory. And people are like, oh, that one's really good. I'm looking for the one that is like Mulch or Dirt, just the worst name you could conceivably think of. And you're like, why in the world would you ever choose the worst name? Well, it's exactly what you said right there. The horse with the worst name is likely to be the least bet on. And for me, if I'm throwing darts at the wall, choosing the one with the worst name probably gives me the best value. So I go out there and I'm like, what is the least attractive name for a horse that I can see right there? And I'm like, oh, Pencil Shavings. Sign me up for that one.
I think that's a very interesting approach. Now, to play devil's advocate, you would assume the people that there are a number of people, a lot of people that pick names and bet. The problem is that those are the smaller bettors. The bigger bettors are going to base their selections and their wagers based on other things. But there is some truth to the fact that that would be contrarian amongst the public in that you definitely hear stories about how this name or that name and, you know, this person got lucky. They bet their, you know, the name of their mom's old car or old cat or whatever. So you do hear that stuff. That's a very interesting methodology.
Hold up.
From our friends at Covers Experts, here's an exclusive offer for the Sharp 600 listeners only. Get 25% off any Covers Experts product when you use promo code SHARP25. Take advantage of this limited time offer. Save a little money and follow the pros all the way to the bank. Again, that's Sharp 25 for 25% off any product.
Show me the money.
So I actually have one bet that I remember, and it may be the only horse racing bet that I do remember, and this was at Keeneland, and the name of the horse had Satan in it. Kid you not, it had Satan in it. And I'm team good vibes. So by no means am I someone who's drawn to the dark side of things, not the Undertaker. But seeing the word Satan in there, I was like, there's no way anybody's going to be betting on this horse. And guess what? It was like Satan's Secret or something like this. Ended up winning, and I cashed my ticket on the horse named Satan. And it's the only time I remember in which this contrarian betting on the name mindset worked for me. And it was an easy one for me to remember because it was named after Satan.
That's a good story. But yeah, those are great places. I'm glad you got to go to Keeneland and the Derby for being from Cincinnati. A lot better probably than Turfway Park. I don't know if you went there, but also a good place to go, but not quite on the level of Keeneland and Churchill Downs. Really, I shouldn't be so hard on Turfway, very close to you. But very good story, though, there about Satan. Maybe I'll have to throw some money in on a Satan horse soon.
So let's get a little bit more specific on horse racing odds in terms of how they work. So we talked about the opening versus closing line, but I'm curious if there are odds that you lean more towards. So for example, when we talk in football, we've got favorites versus dogs. And we traditionally say, you know what? I like to be a little bit more underdog heavy because the public is going to be on favorites. So there's a little bit more value there. So when we're looking at horse racing, you can get anything from a horse that is 1 to 5 favorites all the way to a long shot, which is rolling in at 50 or 60 to 1. So I'm curious from you, and I know this is sort of a blanket statement because not all things are equal, but do you tend to live in a certain range where, for example, you're like, you know what, Rob, I find that horses in the 6 to 1 to 12 to 1 range provide a little bit more value than X, Y, and Z?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the most important thing to do if you're going to be serious at all is to try to set your own lines beforehand, at least to an extent. But so you know, because sometimes there's a 2-to-1 shot that you think should be even money or 6-to-5. That's value. But overall, you know, looking at it from a macro level, I live probably in the 3-to-1 to 8-to-1 range. Occasionally higher, very, very rare times do I go lower if I'm betting a horse to win. And I think it's because they're not totally over bet where the public's totally all in, but they're also not hopelessly unqualified to win at that level or that distance or that situation, you know, that class level, as we call it in horse racing. So I think I would say I live in the 3-to-1 to 8-to-10-to-1 range overall, Rob.
So I think it's safe to say that the majority of the listeners are not going to be creating their own odds for the horses because we're just looking to bet on anything, whether we're at the track or we're doing this online. So whatever we see in front of us, I'm not like, oh, this is what I'm going to do. So we're relying on a lot of expertise from people like you. And remember, we're just trying to be more informed. At the squarest level, you've got me betting on Satan all the way up to, hey, let's get some people like Scott who can help us be smarter. So I now want to look at the two poles, betting on favorites. So this is something that becomes extremely attractive from a public standpoint when the Derby and the Belmont and some of these bigger races come along. You see who the favorite is and everyone's like, oh, I'm just going to go with this. So you're looking at sometimes anywhere from 2-to-1 to 1-to-1 to 1-to-5 on things like this. So what is your mindset on betting the favorite horse?
Well, I think when I'm handicapping a race and when I'm thinking about betting the race, that the first thing I analyze is the favorite. Is this horse a legitimate favorite? And then what the price is. But, you know, if I'm going to the racetrack 3-4 times a year, which is the scenario we're speaking to right now, I'm not betting favorites, Rob. I'm going to stick to that. Maybe I drift to the 4-to-1, 5-to-1, but I'm going to stick to that 5-to-1 to 15-to-1 range for the reasons I said, especially 4, 5-to-1 to 8-to-1. These are horses that have things to like about them. Significant money is going into the win pool, Rob. Yet there's something about one or two other horses that makes them much more attractive, but they're not hopeless. If you find, you know, Satan's Squad at, 40-to-1, you're probably hoping for a near miracle, 40-to-1 shot. We're not talking a 40-to-1 shot in a 150-person golf tournament here. And usually we're talking about an 8 to the Derby's 20 horses, but somewhere between 6 to 10, 11 horses. So 40-to-1 is a lot much more of a long shot. So I think that's where I stand on that.
So now let's talk on the long shot side of things, because there is a large majority of us who say, you know, we're going to be doing this for entertainment. We're on a party bus heading down there or just at home with friends and we're doing this. And you're like, you know what? I like the idea of taking a long shot because you never know what's going to happen, but all things are not created equal. So what does the mindset look like, or what are you trying to identify on a long shot to potentially give us a chance to succeed?
Well, I mean, that's a tough question because we're basing it on not a lot of research. Usually you got to dive really deep, maybe be willing to overlook the last couple of races and look down maybe a little below. Because when you're looking in your program, you're usually the first thing you see is the most recent race, maybe ignoring a couple of the top races and finding a reason why and seeing that the horse is capable of running good races would be one reason. Another reason might be a top jockey or a top trainer. Usually in your programs, you can identify the win percentages of jockeys and trainers. So obviously, if a trainer or a jockey is 1 for 40, they're very unlikely to boot home a winner. Maybe you can find a jockey or a trainer that's a higher percentage, maybe 15. Obviously, if they're a 40% and they're 40-1, that's probably a red flag as well. So that's another thing you can look at when looking for higher priced horses. Maybe we call them connections, but jockeys or trainers that are successful, and maybe the horse is sitting on a big race because of it.
All right, so help us understand, when you look at a program, what should we be looking at? So assume we roll up to Keeneland, we get the program, we open it up, and it's race three or whatever, and we're all just trying to make this informed decision. How are you reading this, or how should we be reading it so that we can give ourselves the best position to succeed?
So one thing that you can look at from a very beginner level, or let's call it advanced beginner level, someone that wants to at least spend a few minutes looking at the race, looking at to see if there's a lot of horses that have ones early in the race, meaning they're fast early on. These horses tend to get bet more, even if they don't finish high, because they're in front early and people are attracted to those ones. If there's multiple horses that like to be on the lead, you can try to beat those horses because they're likely to combat each other in the early stages. Just something to keep in mind there. A combination of the public's eyes being kind of attracted to the number one as opposed to a number five. And then the thought process of, okay, if multiple horses are up front early, a lot of times that sets it up for a horse from the back, because these are herd animals that will get tired when they're competing with each other. So that's one thing to look at. And then remember, a lot of times these horses being finishing second and third all the time can get you over bet also. So don't be too attracted to horses that don't win, that finish second and third a lot of times, because they could just be passing tired horses.
All right. So now let's get into the betting options. And I think this is an extremely important part, because a lot of bettors have to save themselves from themselves, because it's a very attractive thing to be like, ooh, I've got a trifecta on X, Y, and Z. And then two of the three legs come in and you're like, oh, I didn't win. And I think it's very analogous to futures betting or value. You're like, oh, I got such good value on the Nuggets at plus 25-1 to win the title. And you're like, oh, that is good value, except for the fact that the Lakers and Clippers are the teams that are probably going to be coming out of the West. So you're sitting there with a ticket that's worthless, even though you're sitting with tons of value. So to give us a quick overview, we've got win, place, and show, which is betting first, second, or third. We've got exacta, which is first and second. You've got the trifecta, first, second, and third. You can box them, which means it can come in first or second, either order. You can do the trifecta box, first, second, or third, in any order. But every time you do that, it adds as another bet there. So I'm curious, what do you find is the smartest way that we can have a mix of betting options, or how should we be going in from the type of bets we do?
I think people at the level that we're talking about, going four or five times a day, should mostly bet horses to win. If you're betting horses to show, it can keep you alive. If you're just hoping to turn money and you don't have a lot, it's definitely better for entertainment. But if you're going there for those 4 or 5 days and you want a real chance to win, the win pool has the smallest takeout, meaning that the tracks takeout, generally speaking, win, place, and show. And it also is kind of, if you're right, you have a good chance to kind of make money, and kind of staying in that 4 to 12-1 range, betting a horse to win. If you get two winners on the day, you're going to win overall. If you're betting these horses win, place, show, meaning, okay, if the horse wins, you collect all of these. If the horse loses, you lose three times as much, though, if the horse finishes off the board. So I would always recommend betting to win. If there's, you know, if you want to get a little more risky, and exact the box with two or three horses can be a fun way to take a better chance. But my thing always with beginner to intermediate bettors is I think a win bet is this, you know, it's not as sexy, Rob, but it's the best way to go, I think.
And if you're doing a win bet, are you taking just one horse, or are you sprinkling in 3-1, 7-1, 8-1 horse?
No, I think if you're going to bet any horse 8-1 or lower, you just want to bet one horse. If you decide for whatever reason, we've kind of talked a little bit about random handicapping, just for whatever reason, you decide you're not going to bet any of the favorites, then I could see betting a couple dollars to win on multiple horses. But just remember, every time you bet another horse the same amount to win, you're cutting the price in half. So if you bet a 3-1, a 7-1, and an 8-1, and an 8-1 wins, you're only getting 2-1, right? Unless you really scale the bets, which it doesn't seem like this is kind of a conversation for that kind of methodology.
Do you recommend boxing, whether it's an exacta or a trifecta? Because I just think about the consumption habits or the betting habits of my friends and I when we do go to the track, and it's like, oh, I got an exacta box on this and a tri box on this. And it makes sense because we feel a little bit more security in saying, well, I'm just going to pick the three of them, even though I don't know what order, even though, of course, I just made more bets.
Yeah, I don't do a whole lot of boxing. If I'm leaving the favorites out in a situation and using 2, 3, 4 horses, I could see you use boxing long shots. But you remember, every time you box, you're losing. You can't hit both sides of the bet, right? It can't come in 4-6 and 6-4. That's the most simple example. A $2 exacta box 4-6 would cost $2. But the best you can do is hit a dollar exacta, right? So you're throwing away at least half the combinations on every box. Sure, though, it's kind of that feeling of like, oh, that gross feeling. If something was going to pay well and you had the opposite side of it, you don't want to deal with that gross feeling. But long term, the way to do it is to play something straight, avoiding the boxes and throwing away losers on at least half your bets.
So let's talk now about bankroll management with this in the mindset of the dollar values we're going to be doing on the bets, because I think this is a little bit different than traditional betting like we're used to with the NFL. And a lot of people aren't coming to the window saying, I'm doing a $1 or a $2 bet on something. Whereas in horse racing, depending on if you were doing exactas and boxing, and there's just a lot more options there. What do you traditionally recommend for us in terms of betting units so that all of a sudden we don't blow our wad all of a sudden on the first one by saying, wow, here's my bankroll for the entire day and I blew it on this horse to win and it didn't happen. So help us understand a little bit more about the bankroll management side.
Well, that's a tricky question for different levels, because if you're someone that's doing the work beforehand or actually have a strong opinion, I would never say save money for this or save half your money or bet the same amount on each race. But if we're talking about kind of giving yourself the best chance to win, but doing it from an entertaining perspective, let's say we have a 10 race card. Put $10 aside for each race. If you don't have a reason to have a stronger opinion in any of them, bet $10. Okay, let's say we hit for the first two races and we're rolling in it now. Okay, figure out how much you have from that original. Let's say you had $100. Now you have $300. Okay, maybe you up it to $20 a race, right? You're going to be a little more risky. Or maybe you're just someone that's happy to know that you're going to make a little bit of money. But from the perspective that we're talking to, Rob, I would recommend dividing the amount of money by the amount of races and going from there. That'll keep you from getting beat up early and wishing you had money late.
That makes complete sense there. And none of us want to have to be going back to the ATM in race 3 when all of a sudden you're like, that didn't exactly go very well, because you don't want to be the guy who or girl who's hanging out with their friends at the Derby or at Keeneland, and you've busted out in race 3 and you're just sitting there drinking while everybody else is there having fun. Because part of the fun of betting on horses is the camaraderie. I know that I'm a big fan of group betting. So friends and I will get together and we'll all bet the same stuff, just like we do with the Sharp 600 community, saying, let us know what action you have. I like rooting on the same side as my friends, because there's an element of it when you always see the videos of everybody jumping up and down together like, oh my God, this is the best. That's part of the fun of it. And we don't want you busted out just being the person who's just drinking too much because they have no more action in the game.
Yeah, the only thing that I could come, I mean, for me, rooting in a horse and rooting in a horse with other people is the ultimate. The only other feeling that I have gotten similar, and I don't play it a lot anymore, but being at a craps table that's winning is a lot of fun too, because not only are you winning together, but when you're winning and things are going really well, you're bringing in way more than your bet. You know, you could be bringing in 5-1 at a time, 10-1, or way even more in horse racing. So I guess that's why I compare the two. But there's certainly a certain camaraderie in rooting a horse home, especially with your friends.
So let's look at the weather conditions and how that affects things. So, or the surface, we'll call it, because there can be mud, there can be rain, it can be fast, it can be wet. How much does that come into play? Because when we think about the football side of things, it's actually wind that matters the most, not necessarily precipitation or cold, which is oftentimes the incorrect assumption. It's like, oh, it's only going to be 10 degrees, so let's take the under on this. When really it's like, no, if it's a 40-mile-an-hour wind, that has a bigger change on it. And I know that some horses are better in some conditions. So how do you handicap this, and how should we take this into consideration?
Well, from from the perspective we're talking to, it's going to be difficult, because usually what you learn about a track's condition, you learn during the course of the day. So you can learn in the first 2 or 3 races, hey, it rained last night, or the wind is blowing a headwind. It looks like horses that are up front early, or it looks like horses that are in the back are really benefiting from this, but there's no general rule. However, when we talk about mud, I think a lot of people are going to know his mutter was a mutter from Kramer from Seinfeld, and think about that. There are certain horses that are bred, mothers or fathers that have that are bred for the mud. And the reason for that is that there's a lot of these horses have different hoofs. So some of them are bred for the mud, and some of them are bred to run on turf. Some of them are bred to run on dirt, which are the other surfaces. And then at Turfway Park, there's the synthetic surface, which is another surface like that, which is like an all-weather surface. But anyway, certain horses are bred to run on different surfaces. But when it comes to the wind and it comes to specific track conditions for a day, it's very hard to know going into it how it's going to impact it. But if you don't have to be you could be a novice and still understand, hey, it looks like all the horses that are speed, we call them, up in front early, are not stopping. Maybe I should try to find horses in the program that have those ones and twos and are up close early, or vice versa.
So Scott, really enjoyed this conversation. So let's do a quick recap for those listeners to say, all right, when you head to the track with your friends, when that time comes, or you're betting online. So if we look at the card and there's 10 races, figure out, you got $100, $10 on each race. You said, you know what? Bet winners, because that's what we like to do, is you're going to have a greater chance of success. Is there anything else that you want to add that you can leave us with for the entertainment side of things to help us be an informed horse racing better?
Yeah, I mean, I think you nailed it in terms of budgeting and then betting to win. I know it's easy to say, well, my horses are running second and third, I should have bet the place and show. But you're really not going to make good money doing that in the long term. And you give yourself a chance, even if you don't know a lot, by betting horses to win, because you need to be less frequently, and you're splitting those parimutuel pools. Remember, parimutuel pools mean you're betting against the public. You're not betting against the house. So there's only the people that bet on, say, the 4 horse at 8-1 that are splitting that pool. So keep that in mind when you're betting horse racing, the parimutuel pool aspect, Rob.
Scott, I always enjoy jamming with you. Where can everybody connect with you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at ScottChap34. I do write a ton about horse racing for twinspires.com on the blog. So you can usually find my articles on Twitter. If you happen to be going to the races that day and you want my thoughts on the card, usually you can find it there. And the Who Do You Like podcast, which you've been on before. We're talking a lot of horses these days. We talk football, basketball, golf, and more, Rob.
And I want to hear from you. Do you bet on the ponies? And if so, do you have a horse racing story that you want to share with us? You can hit me up on Twitter at Rob Cressy, and make sure to use hashtag Sharp600 and be part of our community. And also make sure to tag at Covers. And one thing that was really awesome this year during the football season is getting all the ratings and reviews on iTunes of people who are listening and winning and learning. It makes me feel good. And when I feel good, I love to give some positive vibes and shout outs on the show. So it would help us a ton if you enjoy this show or any of the shows that we've done. You can jump on iTunes, give us a rating and review. I will give you a shout out on the show. And remember, if you want to be a sharp, don't be a square with your bankroll. Be disciplined with your money management. The Funkadelic Devil hit you with the rap level of 10. The 1, 2, 3, your pen. I get action, so everybody jump with your rump. Looking like the way to